Hello and welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jason Harris. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with Yongnam Lee Kim, MD, for the Advice from the Director series and Oncology Fellows. Dr. Lee Kim is director of the fellowship program in pediatric hematology oncology at the Texas Children's Cancer and Hematology Centers and an associate professor of pediatrics at the Baylor College of Medicine. She is a clinical member of the Hematology Center and the Hemostasis and Thrombosis team at Texas Children's and sees patients in the Hemophilia Treatment Center. Her specialties include general hematology, hemophilia, rare bleeding disorders, and thrombosis. Dr. Lee Kim considered several career paths, including economics, before coming back to medicine. She initially planned to spend her career as a laboratory investigator, but she was drawn to pediatric medicine because she enjoys working with patients and their families and takes great satisfaction in seeing her patients have good outcomes. Shortly after finishing her own fellowship at Baylor in 2005, she had the opportunity to become the associate director of fellowship. Dr. Lee Kim was promoted to director in 2018. In this exclusive interview, Dr. Lee Kim explains how pediatric physicians are challenged to treat families, not just patients, how Baylor tries to help fellows manage their financial health, and the steps she takes to help her trainees care for their own wellness.
What drew you into medicine in general and pediatrics specifically?
So I think I've always been interested in medicine, although I think in undergrad I ventured and studied other things and wondered if I wanted to, for example, pursue a graduate degree in economics and other interests, but I eventually came back to medicine because the interactions that you have with families and with patients and being able to support a patient during what is usually a very hard time in their lives and to be able to help them heal, I think that is a real privilege. And so I think it's that kind of interaction that really drew me into medicine.
So what drew you into pediatrics?
The interesting thing about pediatrics is that you treat not only the patient, but you're really treating the patient in the context of the family. And the good thing about pediatrics, I think, from a medical standpoint, is that children, because they don't have a lot of comorbidities, they generally tend to do better they tend to respond better to treatments for their diseases than adults do. So that's pretty rewarding to be able to have a good outcome when you're treating patients. I think the challenging thing, though, is that children are not in charge of getting their treatment. And so you have to really take them in context of their family unit. And I found that to be something that I really enjoyed, to be able to interact with the entire family in addition to the patient and to kind of incorporate not just their health, but kind of the whole environment in which they receive their care. So I think those are the things that drew me into pediatrics. And I think that's how it differs from adult medicine.
How challenging is it to speak about cancer on multiple levels? Obviously, you've got the parents who are adults and then your patient who's a child who doesn't understand at the same level.
You know, in our field, we have hematology and oncology. And the oncology side of things, again, it's being with a family or a child. And of course, the way the child interprets this diagnosis is going to vary based on their age and, you know, their level of understanding. But again, you're with this family and the patient at a time when they are so vulnerable, and it's probably like the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And so the privilege of being with them at this time and offering them clarity and hope, and really just walking through with them at this time, like I said, is such a privilege to be a part of. And because the outcomes in pediatric oncology for most disorders, so for example, leukemia being the most common diagnosis, the outcomes are really wonderful these days. And the majority of patients actually do get cured of their disease. So that's also, you know, quite rewarding. But on the other side, even the children who unfortunately don't respond to treatment and their disease progresses, to be able to be with that child and family during the last years or days of their lives is also such a wonderful, you know, privilege to share with them in that and offer them hope and joyful moments, even in that situation.
So you are obviously the director of a pediatric fellowship program. So how is fellowship when treating pediatric patients different than a fellowship where you're training to treat adult patients?
Again, I think that the communication skills that you need in pediatrics may be different than what you need for adult medicine. Of course, in some of our patients, especially the adolescents, and we actually see patients through 21, so some of the young adults, there is a little bit of overlap with adult medicine. But when you're dealing with a younger child, there are different kind of skills that you need to be able to talk with them and kind of understand what it is that they're hearing, even though you may be saying, you know, what you're saying. And then, of course, the way you interact with parents, because, you know, these parents or the family, they're making decisions for a different person. And, you know, as a parent myself, I find that it's much harder to make decisions for my children than I would for myself, because, you know, there's a different level of concern or guilt even that you're making the wrong decision on behalf of somebody else. So those are just some inherent differences. And I think when we train our fellows, you know, most of them, they are already aware of that because they've done, you know, pediatric residency. And so they already respect the differences there. But I think that the way the training might be different is just a little bit more of a focus on the entire family unit and the social issues that come with that. I think the other thing, though, is the way people, you know, handle death or bad outcomes. It is very hard to see a child not do well or a child who passes. And so we do have resources for our fellows. We have debriefings and opportunities for them to share the difficulties in seeing those kind of situations.
So how long have you been working with fellows?
So I was the associate fellowship director since 2008. And then in 2018, I became the fellowship director. So I've been with the fellowship leadership for well over a decade now.
Why was that something you wanted to go into? What do you enjoy about working with fellows?
So interestingly, you'll hear this from a lot of people who've been in their medical career for a while, that sometimes you think you're going to end up doing, you know, X, but there's a very windy path and you end up doing Y. So when I started fellowship, I thought I was going to work in a lab and be a researcher. And I think, you know, pediatric hematology oncology really lends itself to that because we are a very research-driven field. But after I finished fellowship, the opportunity came up for me to become the associate program director. And since I was not that far out of fellowship, I thought, well, I could contribute to this because I was a recent fellow. And so that's how I got involved in that. And then as time went on, you know, I think medical education in and of itself is a very robust and rewarding career track. And so I went on to get my master's of education and then get more involved in medical education. And honestly, that has been one of the best things in my career, to be involved in training fellows and working with fellows, residents, and medical students. What makes it so rewarding is seeing somebody who already, like, well, first of all, being a fellowship director, I'm kind of lucky in that here are people who already have decided they want to be in this small sector of your field. Like they want to be a subspecialist in this very specific area that you're in. So they're inherently very interested and motivated people. And then to see them on day one, really, like, you know, eager, but not, you know, having a lot of expertise. And then 3 years later, coming out as experts, it's just amazing to see it and to see that progression. And then if you're in this role for a while, you see your graduates go on and become leaders of other sections, and they do amazing things in research, and you see them giving talks at national meetings. And it's just a very exciting thing to see people progress in their journey like that.
Coming into your program, is it mostly pediatricians who want to work in oncology or oncologists who decide they want to work with children?
So in pediatric hematology oncology, you have to do a pediatric residency first. You can also do a pediatric and internal medicine combined residency. But then if you choose pediatric hem-onc, you've decided to specialize in children and you won't see the older adults. So that's the only path into pediatric hematology oncology, to do peds residency first.
Is there any one thing that you feel like a fellow needs to take or must take from their fellowship?
If you ask any certifying body, they'll give you a 50-page document of what they need to know at the end of fellowship. But so I'll say from the clinical side and then other. So from the clinical side, what you need to take out of fellowship is obviously you need to be able to recognize the disease, and you need to know how to do basic management of that disease and when to ask for help. You know, in medicine, we have so many advances in medicine. And I think what that's done is it makes our patient population like much more complex, because they're living through the early stages of chemo, for example. And then we go on to see them later on, and there are other complications that occur. So the basic management, I think you absolutely need to know that, and you need to recognize those things and be able to treat the basic management. But then, because things are so complex, I think you also need to know when you're kind of beyond the scope of your expertise, and you need to know when to reach out and ask for help. So that's what I would say from a clinical standpoint. I think all the other things, whether it's academics, academic medicine, or if you're going into a leadership role in clinical care or in research, you know, look for opportunities to do things that you may not have considered before, but you may not know that you love it. So if an opportunity arises for you to teach or for you to be involved in a collaborative research project, until you've tried it, you don't know whether you love it or not. So be open-minded and make sure you figure out what it is that you love, and maybe figure out the things that you don't like as much. But keep an open mind, because you don't know where your career is going to evolve. And when you do take on those opportunities, give it your 100%. Be reliable and, you know, be on time. Get your things in, like do what you say you're going to do. And I think that's probably true, not just for peds hem-onc, but for anybody in medicine. I think those are just some basic tenets of a successful career.
I don't know if it's so much an issue in pediatrics, because obviously you have to do a peds residency before you go into fellowship, but I'm always struck by how often people get into fellowship and then decide, oh, I'm in the wrong field. I need to change directions. I need to pick a different specialty. So do you see that very often when you're dealing with fellows?
I would say in our program, not often, maybe once every few years, there is somebody who finishes our fellowship program, does very well, but then for personal reasons, they decide that they're going to get a job in general pediatrics or something that isn't related to the subspecialty they trained in. Fortunately, I have not found that to be common in our subspecialty.
People who go into fellowship, they're probably not making as much money as they would if they went directly into practice. And they're certainly not making as much as if they were going into, say, the law or a business field. So what do you tell your fellows about managing their money?
So that has been an area of interest amongst our fellows. And we actually have a faculty member who has a personal interest in just financial health. And so she has given our fellows a workshop on this. And then, of course, at the institutional level, we do have workshops for the fellows as well. Just kind of, you know, the trajectory of your income in medicine is really pretty atypical compared to other job markets and industries. So that's kind of how, those are the resources that we offer our fellows. I mean, I think, to be honest, like if you're going down the route of pediatrics, most of us are not in this for the money to begin with. I don't think people go into pediatrics because they're going to strike it rich. So the difference, I think, between being a general pediatrician versus being a hem-onc doctor, I don't think that usually is like a deal breaker for our subspecialty.
Along those same lines, how do you encourage your fellows to take their own health and wellness seriously?
So we have dedicated, you know, scheduled efforts to do this. And then we, you know, as a fellowship director, I also informally, you know, check in on them, especially with the pandemic. I think that has brought its own issues of wellness. And I think we've also evolved. At the start of the pandemic, our wellness issues were very different than what we're seeing right now, I think. So we have wellness programs offered at the institutional level. We have it at the level of, you know, what we call Fellows College, which is for all of the fellows at our institution. And then we have it at our program, like our fellowship has its own wellness activities, some that are directed by us as faculty, and then others that are directed like by the fellows themselves. And we encourage them, because I think that wellness means different things for different people. So for me to tell them, hey, we're going to do this because this is what I think is going to make you well, may not be the help that they're looking for. So we have multiple levels of wellness. But I think in a general sense, I'm always very cognizant of the impact of the work that they do on their wellness and health. So what I mean by that is when we decide on their rotations, or when we decide on their schedules, like, you know, for the year, or even what they do during each rotation, I'm very tuned. I think one of the things that I focus on a lot is how this is going to impact them, not only from an educational level, but just sort of from a health and wellness level. Like, is this too much for one person to handle? Like, is this going to burn them out? So these are all things that we as program directors and as leadership in our section, you know, we think about these things as we're creating the program for the fellows.
You mentioned the pandemic. How has that changed the fellows' experience over the past year?
Yeah. So, you know, at the start of the pandemic, it was like a sudden shutdown of everything. So, you know, even as faculty, we were only told to come in if we absolutely needed to. And so, you know, when we did go in, it was like a ghost town in our hospital, you know, like the clinics, it would be just kind of bare staff. Our offices were often empty. And so what I learned throughout that time is that I think but then on the other hand, you know, some people kind of, you know, were too nervous to come in, and telling them to come in, even on the days that we expected them to come in, for some people that created a great deal of anxiety. So one of the things that made me realize is that it sort of had and made me appreciate the differences of how people were taking in this information, and largely because who they were trying to protect, you know, might vary from person to person. So if you are living with an immunocompromised person at home, or if you're pregnant, or maybe maybe you're on the other end of the spectrum, like you just need to, like you want to get out of the house and you feel like suffocated just staying at home all the time. Wherever you are, there's just no like one size fits all solution for how to deal with that. So I think at the beginning of the pandemic, we were seeing a lot of, you know, sort of like questions of, do I go in? Do I not go in? And so it made the experience for the fellows, like some fellows had to be there because they were doing some rotations where they had to go in person, and other fellows had the option. And it just was, there was a lot of, I guess, uncertainty as to like what was the right thing to do. So that's, I think that was the problem in the beginning of the pandemic. I think now, you know, now that we've been in this for a while, I think it's more, people are just kind of tired. They're tired of being uncertain, not knowing what's going to happen. I have to say, I'm thankful that the fellows' rotations at this point really have not been affected. They, you know, they go in and they do their clinical time, you know, of course, properly distanced and wearing proper PPE, but their clinical rotations haven't been affected. But what I'm seeing more is sort of the long-term effects of not having normal social interactions. I think that's just been hard on all of us. I think the issues have evolved from last year to now, but certainly we're still dealing with, I think issues related to the pandemic on our day-to-day.
Are you seeing more burnout among your fellows at all? Like you said, they're not getting that normal social interaction.
So, you know, it's hard to say right now, because I think for most trainees at this time of the year, halfway through their academic year is when most trainees start to feel tired. The initial exhilaration of starting is kind of waning, but you're not so close to the end of the year that you see the light at the end of the tunnel. So I think everybody gets tired around now. So it's hard for me to say how much of that is burnout from the pandemic versus burnout, or just fatigue, rather, that happens at this time of year.
So So I'm going to give you a chance to brag about your program a little bit. What's great about being a PEDS fellow at Texas Children's?
Okay. So I think, okay, I am going to brag about our fellows. So I think we have truly the best pediatric hem-onc fellows in the country. I think what makes them unique is that they really look out for each other. They look out for their patients. They are just truly excellent people to work with. Now, of course, I can't take all the credit for that because they probably came in being really excellent, and maybe we just selected really excellent people. But I think one of the things that we try to promote in our program is we try to role model collegiality and, you know, teamwork and team building and teamwork. So when we work in teams, many of us will reach out and kind of talk to our colleagues and discuss complicated cases. And that's just normal because, you know, we have the fortune of having a lot of expertise in very specific things in our section. And I think the fellows learn from that, and they learn, you know, it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to discuss, you know, cases and be very collaborative. And so that's one of the strengths of our program. I think having resources and being able to be very collaborative and work in the team setting, whether it's for patients, whether it's for research. I think the other thing that makes our program really great is both clinically and from a research standpoint, just the opportunities to see a lot and to experience a lot. I mean, there are so many choices of what you can see and do here. I think that's definitely a strength of our program. And I think that is truly what attracts a lot of fellows to our program. And then a small note. So this year, we decided to implement Fellows Appreciation Week. So we had all of our faculty sign up to do special things for our fellows every day of the week. And the sign-up sheet completely filled up to the point where some faculty felt sad that they didn't get a chance to sign up to do something. But I encouraged them to go do things on your own. And so every day this week, we've had people doing special things for our fellows. And so it's, and I think that it really works both ways. I think the giver, you know, gets a lot out of it. And of course the recipient also feels appreciated, but that's just kind of an example of the sort of activities that we do in our program and kind of the culture of our training program.
That's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank my special guest, Dr. Yoongna Lee Kim, and thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science Summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.